Welcome, everybody. Thanks so much for being here at, I think, the third in-person hybrid version of FindConf. I've actually forgotten how many years we've done this, but it's really exciting to pull together lots of talks and ideas from around the community and to share it with people online, in person, and in the archive for years to come. So thanks, everybody, for contributing along the way. I know you couldn't all be here in person, but we'll hear from everyone. If you're here, if you're watching us online, if you've not heard of the Find Project, or if you've just heard a little and you're not too sure what's going on, I just wanted to do a very quick bit about what we're about. I'm guessing that probably what's on your mind is, I just want to build an app. Pretty common rallying call. But what does that even mean? Do you want to build it for your phone? Apple makes some good ones. Other manufacturers are available. It seems to be the default for an app. But of course, maybe it's for a tablet, something that you're wanting to carry around with you, larger form factor, or perhaps it's used around your workplace. Let's not forget, of course, that native software is something that's important to install on your computer as well, your laptop that you're lugging around, or the desktop that's beautifully adorning your workspace at home, potentially collecting dust, or maybe it's just a gaming rig. But nonetheless, it's all something that native applications could be installed on. But also, maybe you're looking at smaller or industrial setups, you've got a custom device, you want to manage software for that. Maybe it is actually a gaming platform, but you want to have some other software on there. Steam Deck, again, other supplies are available. This one truly is running a fine game, and there was some fine-based medical software on that embedded touchscreen device. Or maybe you're actually going off the deep end, you're looking at e-ink displays or tiny little embedded devices, hardware with 5 buttons and a 2-inch display. There are so many different platforms that you could be building applications for. They all have different languages, there's different tools, and there's a lot of difference in the support available for creating things. Fragmentation, lots of overspend and waste. And I truly believe that none of the users of these devices really care. It's just a computer running software, so why does any of this matter? Shouldn't this all just work? If there was, in fact, a universal solution to something along these lines, apologies for the cheese, I just love this, and like theme parks, the happiest place in the world. Why can't building software also be just that simple, straightforward, and easy to get into? If this tooling and technology could be used, it would be just fine.
Hey.
We could all be collaborating on the same code bases, distributing to all of the different devices that we've got. No loss in productivity, no expensive overhead. Businesses, users, and software developers would all be benefiting. And so this is indeed where the Find Toolkit came from. And the vision as it is on our website remains to be the best toolkit for easily developing beautiful native graphical applications for desktop, mobile, and beyond. And of course, beyond means more and more over time. And I've said this a lot. It's on the website, it's what we tell everybody. But I think fundamentally it's a little bit more. We are fixing application development for everyone, forever. These applications, they write once, they build for all devices, it's just working, there's no library, there's no setup. It's modern tooling, modern techniques that's just going to work. An amazing community of people with excellent support following good engineering practices. This is the way it should be. And this is what we're gathering to talk about, I feel. Welcome to FindConf 2025. We have already had this morning a really good session of contributor discussions and planning. And we have an afternoon of presentations from around the community, many of whom could be here today, and some who have dialed in and recorded in advance. Later on, there'll be an Ask Me Anything, there'll be a session to chat with a number of the team who are here, online or in person, or the other way around, in person or online. Please do ask questions as we go. For the people on YouTube, feel free to type them in through the sessions, and we'll answer those questions after each of those segments, and hopefully we can cover anything. But don't forget, if you miss that, we'll be online later, we'll be in person down the road afterwards as well, so plenty of opportunities to ask. Today wouldn't be possible with the support of more people than just the speakers as well. Our t-shirts and the cost of bringing people here today has been sponsored by our amazing community sponsors, people who love the project and want to help us do better. Partly the way that we do better is by coming together in this way. I can't thank everyone, unfortunately. It's a very long list, fortunately, but you can find them at find.io/sponsor. And the venue, the food and the drinks today and refreshments later on are sponsored by Aptrix AI, which is the business that I've recently founded. And as we're sponsoring, I'm going to take just a moment to tell you a little bit about that as well. So Aptrix AI is a universal app studio. It's drag and drop visual application creation with artificial intelligence to help people who are less technical get involved. There's a simple screenshot there that shows how the visual creation can be alongside code and help you to learn what is happening. The technology is all built on Fine. Everything that you see on screen there has been created with the toolkit, and we're currently in open testing. You can download it and try it out from aptrix.ai is our website, and there's lots of functionality for people who are wanting to get a little bit more into their business. I think that is, however, enough of an intro from the sponsors and why we're here. Let me just get on with the first presentation of the afternoon. Building better apps everywhere. It's an opportunity to look at what's happening around the project and what's changed since last time. The thing that has struck me in the last few months, going to conferences and meeting people, is that the popularity of the project seems to be reaching another level, which is really exciting. We have over 27,000 stars on GitHub, which I just love. They're very shiny, and lots of them is better. It puts it very far up there on, you know, how it might compare to other projects. The thing that I find really interesting is that what this means is that we're now in the top 1,000 open source projects of all time, assuming that they're hosted on GitHub, and I know not everything is, but most have a mirror or a presence there, so pretty much is representative. And we got there in just 7 years of development, which for a project of this size is not bad. So that's, I think, something worth celebrating. Another really cool thing is that we're seeing courses, tutorials, and material being created by people around the world and distributed on their own. It's not just put together by the community or the developers here, but people off their own back. And we have had people doing video tutorials in multiple different languages across multiple platforms. And I now believe that the project has been represented in some way at all major Go conferences as well. I've been lucky to go to many of them. Members of the community have presented. And also, folk have started to reach out to me and say, oh my goodness, I love that presentation about Go at this place that I went to. And I'd had to say, oh well, I mean, I'm flattered. But actually, that was somebody else. You know, I'll put you in touch with who pulled that talk together. So it's not just necessarily stuff that we're putting together and taking out there, which I think shows that people not only are using this, but are excited about it and wanting to tell their friends and colleagues. Yeah, so over the last year, we've had an ever-expanding community, which is very exciting. We've got two new core contributors over that time. Thanks very much, Simon, who's here, and we'll hear from him a little bit more later. He jumped on board at the last conference that we held in Berlin, although he tells me that was his plan all along, and you know, it was just really nice to meet people before he committed. So we're going to hear more about the work that he's been doing. We've also welcomed Eli very recently from the US, who has been bringing really amazing optimizations at the graphical level and additions that just make this stuff so much more polished than it was before, which I think is actually saying something, but particularly on mobile, it's made the difference from good to actually really great. There's interest from around the globe as well. There's a lot happening. One thing that I found really interesting was I was in San Francisco and I was doing a little bit of work over there, and I looked up at the skyline, as one probably should do in big cities, to see a little bit more than just the pavement in front. And I saw a massive billboard for a company that was using Fine internally for a piece of their software. I can't share who or what they were doing, unfortunately, but nonetheless, they were out there. This is a company that you'd recognize as well, but it was really warming to know that they're doing what they are doing really big and bold with the technology that we've made available. In a similar vein, there's a lot of cool production apps. I think a number of us working in the team have collaborated with other companies to deliver something, but we're in a place where they're doing it internally, they're doing it privately, and we're not allowed to shout about what the end results are at this point. But more case studies to come, I really hope. And at the GopherCon recently, I had a fantastic conversation where a number of the team from Google came and asked a little bit more about the project, were curious about what could be done, how they could find out more, and what the opportunities were for them to support what we were doing and to work together. So it's pretty interesting to see what they might be thinking about, and we're going to look at that discussion. And I understand that they're starting to look at app creation as a use case for Go, which actually is really big, because for the longest time it's been a server language for systems programming, and that's about it. But there's an update coming to the website and other places of documentation that illustrate more varied things that you can do, and we're definitely up there as an example of some really cool stuff that's possible. The last thing I wanted to say about growing a community is that we know the importance of everything that's happening, and we want to do more to give back. So in terms of sponsorship, we're starting to engage with the projects that we really depend upon to contribute a percentage of the sponsorship income that we have to those projects so that the entire ecosystem continues to grow. It is only once we have income above a certain point, because below that it just becomes unfortunately a little bit too much work to juggle those. And at the moment, we're just below it. So we're always looking for more sponsorship, but I'll touch on that later. So that's community and the growing project, but I also wanted to talk about what is new in terms of functionality. We've had two big releases, 2.6 and 2.7, which has delivered a lot of new functionality. A shout out to Sebastian, who has contributed both the polygon, which is allowing us to do many-sided shapes on the screen, but also the arc primitives to our canvas package. Some really nice examples of what could be created with those new types in the API. And that's under final testing at the moment, will be released in a couple of weeks' time. We also introduced Square, which doesn't sound quite so fundamentally exciting because we had rectangle already. And in fact, that's a function of rectangle.aspect. Your rectangle could be stuck to a certain aspect ratio. Why would that be useful? Well, we've got images that can be contained in a space, and now you can draw a frame around them, for example, with a rectangle at the same aspect ratio. So we're removing lots of math and complicated code from applications wherever possible. You can now have an image cover the space, a new image fill type cover, which means it's going to crop and throw away bits that aren't possible to fit in. And that could be really useful when you're packing lots of information into specifically smaller areas where you want the text to flow a particular way and you want the important part of an image to appear. We have added the ability to make pill rectangles. I don't know if that's what the words are, but with a maximum radius constant, you can have the corners automatically make a half circle. Again, taking away the maths of managing different radiuses as things resize. And corners added to images as well. And also you can control corners of rectangles independently if that's helpful to you. We have the navigation container. Thanks very much, Simon, for that. That's coming in. You can see it there. Helpful to put items onto a stack of navigation and go backwards and forwards through it. And a clip container, which I've not drawn, because it literally cuts things out and focuses on a certain area, which people have been asking for, and that just helps constrain to sub-elements of your UI. There's a whole bunch of interesting other APIs around scrolling and the inner window as well. Lots of additional APIs have been added to existing containers, but also to widgets. we've got the new calendar and date entry widgets. They came from, or at least the calendar came from Finex. It was promoted up, so that's nice to see. And the partial check for a three-state check, pretty useful. One that people have been clamoring for, though, strangely, was a selectable label. Not an entry, but static text that you could drag and copy out of. And then, in the vicinity of more APIs, we've got cursor handling around the entry, so different sizes for your labels. Again, it's we're going for consistency and a good layout by default, so that goes through the theming system, but it's more configurable than it was before. Your lists can start from a different number in rich text, and we've also updated the validation a little, so if you want to pre-populate values, you can make sure that the response for those is appearing before the user has interacted, which can help for more complicated flows. The big thing, however, that's happened in the last year is that we did a lot of work on enhancing concurrency in applications, and this has had the fantastic side effect of an incredible increase in the performance of complex code. Any app should get a 2 to 3 times speed up, but we had some example apps where it was showing 12,000 time speed up. So depending on how you've got concurrency, how it's working, this could be really substantial. The reason to do it, though, is eliminating race conditions. We tried to handle concurrency for people in a way they didn't have to care, realized that there was limitations to that approach, and so now it is possible for the default to be race-free. And if you want to do multiple things in concurrency, then we have an API that makes it safe completely. So the race detectors and all of the tooling likes the application there. It helps to simplify custom widgets. The event management behavior is very straightforward by default, and there's a single way to add that concurrency if you need to. And the probability is that for most people building out their first few applications, you don't need to know. It's just going to work better and faster and safer than it did before. For people who do need to know, if you're doing background processing, we've introduced two new APIs, find.do, which will go execute that code safely at some point soon, and find.doAndWait, which says execute that code right now and tell me or return when you're done. These are only needed if you're executing graphical code, front-end updates from a background process. And I have a quick example of that here. This code is a little clock. We have the initial time set, and we insert that into a label, and that's your setup, your basic display. And then we do a new go function. So this is going to run that code in the background constantly. We have a ticker that every 1 second is going to execute the inner code. We get the new time by formatting time with the same constant. And then the one place where the code in your app might have changed is here, find.do, and pass the function that is out.setText. And that is just going to mean that with all of the different things happening in your application, the graphical update is going to happen completely safely. No data sharing issues. And as a result, it also means that it's removing possibility of potential graphical glitches. We didn't see them very much, but there was a number of really hard to reproduce bugs that automatically got solved when we made this migration. Speaking of migrations, this is a fairly big change. We wanted to allow people to opt into it over time. It's the default for a new project, but it's not something necessarily that you want to turn on as soon as you upgrade. So we were inspired by Go's metadata approach to say, I want to opt into new functionality. Using the fineapp.toml, we've added a new section called migrations, and each time there is a migration like this, there will be a field that you could turn it on by saying equals true. In this case, find do in that string. The expectation is that these will all be turned on over time. Of course, there's the potential that that might not be the case, but we're working on the workflow that you can turn it on yourself, do some local testing, and then know that you're set up for the turning on overall. For the specifically migration of this new threading model, you can actually test it locally with a pattern that we set up so that migrated and then the name of the migration can be passed into your application to verify everything is working as a local developer. And then you can set the flag in your build metadata so that it's set true for everybody who downloads your app source code. of course, it will be turned on by that parameter or that parameter if you compile it for distribution. In 2.8, which is not the release we're preparing right now, but the next one down the road, the warnings, if you're not using this correctly, are going to become stronger. If you launch the application and it's not been migrated, we're going to say you should be doing something about this, because we do want to push people to this more safe, faster place. And likely in 2.9, this will be turned on by default. And in that case, if you had what could have been deemed unsafe code before, you may start to see crashes occur, because we're going to remove the guardrails. The reason for that being, to make this migration possible, we have a lot of code in place that checks if something is safe and does a bit of work to make it safe if it's not. That actually slows things down. So if you don't migrate, it's possible you'll see a slight performance degradation, but once you've done it, it's going to be absolutely flying. And the last big addition in between these times is new tiny places where you can be using Fine. I'm sure a lot of people have heard of TinyGo. It came up at least 3 times in the discussions this morning. You may know of Tamago. It's a smaller project, but it's really interesting at this time. It has been part of a discussion around the Go proposals about supporting the NoOS version of GoOS. Now, if that doesn't mean anything, that's fine. But Go compiles to all these different devices just completely out of the box. But what if you don't want to specify a particular device? If you want it on an embedded or a custom piece of hardware, you need to understand or explain to the compiler that there's nothing built in, you can't rely on anything. And that's where the Tamago project has come from as well. It builds binaries that you can drop onto hardware. It doesn't need an operating system. It doesn't need any kind of runtime at all. This has been really interesting to think, what could native apps do that other systems for deploying applications can't? And so we have added a new embedded driver. Previously, it'd been desktop, mobile, web, essentially, with some test driver harnesses as well. The new embedded one allows you more control about how the application works. You're expected to define how a rendered frame is displayed on the device. You're probably pushing pixels to an I/O port or something like that. And then you'll define how events are sent into the application and provide a little bit of metadata, like how big's the screen, for things like that that are essential to get an application running. With that information, you call setDriverDetails. It's a new API that allows this to all come together. And we have also some packages in FineX, the extension of the Fine project, which provides standard details, so you don't have to know how the devices work if it's a standard or common device. Let's just quickly use that in some code. So we've created our Fine app with app.new, but we want this to work in a really weird context. The one I have here is, again, is provided by the FineX project. We're using the UEFI driver. So your bootloader on a modern computer is probably EFI. You go through a screen before it finds your operating system definition and boots it. But what we're doing here is we're creating a new I don't have an operating system build, and it's using the definitions of an EFI bootloader on the hardware. And with that, we compile the same application again, but we load it into not an operating system, the bootloader, this QEMU. It has simply booted up this EFI image. There's no operating system, there's no security vulnerabilities, there's no code underlying the application that can be hijacked. We're just running this Fine app, and it's the same code otherwise that you would use anywhere else. So some pretty universal app creation here, which is beyond what you might expect from existing tools. And there is a lot more that's been worked on. We have mobile scroll speed, the idea of momentum. It feels a lot more native when you're on touchscreen devices. Outside of the threading performance increases, the rendering that Eli has contributed has made a tremendous difference to the feel and speed of the applications on lower power or mobile devices. Storage is now default for the web driver, so if you deploy your application into the web context, it's going to remember your preferences and any files that you store in the local context. So you've got a safe multi-tenant system just because it's using local store, and that's happening all by default. Thanks for Drew and Simon's hard work on those elements as well. And we've got improvements to data binding. The APIs are using new Go generic types so that you don't have to think so much about what type goes with what widget. You can bind it to your data better. Jake has been hard at work behind the scenes on a lot of that stuff, and optimizing more of our data handling and workflow behind the scenes. We've got a row wrap layout, which helps to flow multiple bits of content. System tray now knows how to show windows rather than just pop up menus. You can turn that on optionally with a new API. And we have a lot more translations as well. Portuguese, Greek, and simplified Chinese were added recently, but this, I think, means that we're now in 14 different languages at the toolkit level, and your application, your development, your team can add to that if you want. Sorry, that was quite a lot, but it's been a really big year, a bumper 12 months, I think, since the last one. Thank you, everybody. I mean, everybody here, everybody online, everybody I've mentioned for contributing, and everybody that I haven't. It wouldn't be possible with the community around us. Literally, that is what makes this. I hope everybody has a really fantastic day, and I'll take questions if there are any, but otherwise we'll just step onto our next presentation.